Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I'm interested in people. I'm fascinated by people, their story, their journey, what they learned along the way. I like history, too. Like, wise people will tell young college kids, hey, if you could go back and get a minor in something, get a minor in history. You'd learn a lot. Our next guest has got some life experience, some expertise. Patrick Crakes. He's a media consultant. He's worked with Fox Broadcasting, served in the United States Army, infantry platoon leader, vice president of programming and research at Fox, senior vice president at Fox. He knows strategy, he knows media, he knows consulting. All of those things make him the right guest when we're talking about the Pac-12 conference. Patrick, welcome to the show. I appreciate you making time. I understand you started as a mail clerk at Fox. Was that the gateway?
Yeah, that actually was the gateway. That started the whole thing. And John, just for the record, I want you to know I'm sending my resume over to you tonight for you to rewrite it because that was an excellent pitch. I'd hire me. I mean, for crying out loud, good Lord, that's insane. The mailroom really started it all for me in 1992. After a year, once I got it started in the research department, there was just so much growth at Fox that the opportunities were just up and to the right. So I was really lucky to be in the right place at the right time.
When you're in the mailroom, are you well aware that this is a great networking opportunity, a great opportunity for you to get some traction at Fox, or were you just happy to have a job in the mailroom?
No, I pretty much everybody was in the mailroom at that time. I think it's changed a lot now, but for a long time, the mailroom was a place for people to break into the business. And the other 12 folks in the mailroom with me were very production oriented. I actually wanted to get into the business side. And one of the interesting things is that kind of the entire studio, the entire operation knows that, right? The network studio know that. But at the same time, when the HR folks told me my first day there was, after they told me that I had to park outside the lot and walk in every day, they told me, remember, everybody at this studio outranks you except security cops that have to wear helmets. And sure enough, there were a set of security cops at Fox that had to wear helmets. I'm not quite sure I understand why we outranked them. Perhaps in some kind of emergency, we'd be called to have leadership, fill the leadership void. But you're cognizant of your place, but at the same time, it's an opportunity to meet people. And if they think you're reliable, and in my case, the truth of the story is that there was a position available in the research department as a research analyst, and the HR department thought I was a good kid, and they drew my attention to it. I went for the interview, and then they spoke to Rupert Murdoch's assistant, and Rupert Murdoch's assistant chased down the head of the department in New York and said, you should hire this guy because he's been delivering the mail down here to the executives for a year, and we think he's sharp. And I got the job without even having to meet the head of the department. So that's how it works.
That's phenomenal. Patrick Crakes is our guest, media consultant. You served in the United States Army. Thank you for your service. You were a long-range reconnaissance specialist in the 82nd Airborne Division. What did you learn there that you carry with you the rest of your life?
Well, I think the importance of being prepared, being diligent, having habits that can help you be successful when things go wrong, and being very flexible, right? So one of the things that doctrine in our military, for all the branches, we rely a great deal upon our enlisted folks, especially very young enlisted folks, privates, seamen, airmen. And we can do that because we're a free country. We're not afraid to share information with them, right? So on the battlefield, things are very fluid. There's a plan, right? And then, as von Clausewitz said, in his book on war, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy, and things begin to change. So life gets a vote, right? It's the Jurassic Park theory of the world. Life gets a vote. So you change the battle plans on the fly, and we enable our youngest enlisted people to do that. And if they see something, seize the initiative. You know, make sure you communicate, but don't be locked in stone. So, you know, I got a real opportunity by being in the 82nd Airborne Division. I found my way there. I didn't enlist to go into the 82nd Airborne Division. I decided after I got out of basic training I wanted to do that. And that was just a great place to be for a kid my age who kind of didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, but it was an opportunity to do something really productive and exciting and get responsibility at a very young age that I don't really think I got the same level of responsibility, truly saying, until, you know, I became a vice president at Fox in my 30s.
You were responsible at Fox for a period for the NFL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, other things. You rise to vice president of programming and later senior vice president. So you know how the media companies think. I'm looking at the Pac-12. They got a new commissioner in George Kliavkov. What are they up against as they try to negotiate their rights moving forward?
Well, look, the Pac-12 has got a lot of great things going for it, right? Nothing's going to change their status within the Power Five. They have intangible assets that are not going to change, right? They're probably just going to become more valuable. But, you know, value is driven by some opportunity things that like timing, you know, exactly what your constraints are with your other partners. And so the Pac-12, you know, their rights aren't available for a couple more years. And while the rights deal that they did with Fox and ESPN was a very, very good one, right? The question of Pac-12 networks sits up in the air. It's never achieved its potential, right? And some of the theses that it was predicated upon just haven't evolved yet. They may evolve in the future, but they didn't evolve over the first third and second third of the life of that network. So one of the questions the new commissioner has to sort out is, does he want to do something with that now, or does he want to wait? And there's an opportunity cost there, right? Because the Pac-12 networks are undervalued, and you can wait on the idea that there's more value in 2024, right, or 2023 when the negotiation would begin. Or do you need to make a deal now because you don't want to forego another couple years of revenue because your competition set is moving ahead with conference-focused networks that are monetizing near fully, and in particular the Big Ten?
If you're the Pac-12, and, you know, Patrick, I sit you on their shoulder as a consultant, and the question from the presidents and the chancellors is, do we need this expense? Do we need the network? They have invested a lot of time, effort, energy, money, hope into that network. Would you advise them to stay the course on that network? Is there value there?
I think there is value in a network. I do not believe, you know, the established platforms, right, the established system, you know, much is written about the transition to streaming. It's very real. But there's also another reality that everyone has to understand. Having a flagship network builds your brand and gives you lots of places to air lots of content on established platforms, which why in secular decline still reach nearly 80 million U.S. TV homes out of 120 and remain enormously profitable. Meanwhile, the new streaming business, right, while growing and exciting, is extremely unprofitable. So you have to have assets, you have to have your media assets spread across kind of the established system and the new system and have them work together. It's not an either-or situation. So the solution for Pac-12 networks is to maximize its value on established platforms, which it's currently struggling to do, and find a way to also increase value and have a presence on the digital side. That positions you for the present and the future. So I would keep that network. I think it's very important. There isn't all the other conferences believe in their networks. There's no reason to walk away from it just because there's been a challenging strategy there. You can evolve that and still be looking towards the future at the same time.
Patrick Crakes is our guest, media consultant, former VP at Fox. You were dealing with at the highest level at Fox with programming, and the NFL, of course, a big part of that. Where does the Pac-12 fit on the landscape, Patrick? You know, with with all the content that's out there, how attractive is the Pac-12?
It's very attractive. I kind of divide content into three tiers, right? Tier one, tier two, tier three. Tier one is the very elite set of content. It's the kind of content that a media network will pay you billions of dollars a year for, because in turn, well, they can turn around to a distributor and across established and digital platforms to get billions back from them. And there's a handful, maybe 10 directional properties in the United States that can do that. Overseas, it's always less. It's usually typically three. So the United States is different than a lot of other countries, but the number of tier one content it has. But, you know, it's only 10. And the Pac-12 fits into that, right? So there are tier one properties. They're going to remain a tier one property. They're very, very attractive. But it's very important to understand that when you're acquiring content for a network, I tell my investor clients this all the time. Modern content schedule creation has an awful lot in common with modern financial portfolio theory. You're creating a portfolio of content across the distribution assets that you have, which are also a portfolio. And you're creating value in comparison to your competitors and also to the marketplace at large with advertisers and distributors. So the Pac-12 has value in one portfolio. If you pick it up and move it to another, it can have a different value. And one of the things that may happen to the Pac-12 because of where it goes in this, you know, where its actual rights fees, where its rights become up for renegotiation, is there may be some shift in which portfolios can maximize value for it. And that's going to be one of the interesting things, because there's been some shifting landscape. You know, the Pac-12 is a tier one property, right? There's no doubt about that. But increasingly, tier one properties are getting larger and larger rights fees. One of the big questions I have is, how much is that going to suck all the energy out of everything that's not a tier one sport? And because there are a reasonable amount of tier one sports in the United States, 10 to 11, like I said, you know, does that impact them at all either? And with the Big Ten on deck, NASCAR and a couple other important strategic tier one sports, that distributors are prepared to say, look, you're getting a dollar and a sub fee for a network. We'll ascribe 10 cents to that for just that property right there. You know, where the Pac-12's content ends up could look a little different in 2024 than it does today.
We're talking to media consultant Patrick Crakes, former vice president at Fox. Let me ask you, Amazon, you know, a lot of talk about Amazon. They're entering the NFL space. Where do you see that 5-10 years from now? Are we going to be watching everything on Amazon, or are they just dabbling here?
I don't think we'll be watching everything on Amazon. I don't think they're dabbling, right? I think the right word for this is seriously experimenting. They're really trying to find out just what the utility is of live sports. And they've stepped up the experiment significantly, not just with the NFL investment, but with how the French League One rights in France fell to them because of the Media Pro disaster out there. They had an opportunity to invest there, right? That story's got some other particulars to it, but they're trying to acquire for the next couple years the top soccer league in France. I think what they're trying to sort out for them, this is not when they acquire a sports property that's strategic, like a tier one property that they're going to spend billions for or hundreds of millions. It's not like they're looking to make, we're going to spend $800 million, we're going to make $801 million on this. It's marketing expense for Prime and other, inside their bundle of services. This is a marketing expense to try to make subscriber growth stickier, to make engagement higher within that bundle, and to perhaps grow it in international markets where it's not as strong as it is in the United States, because they're not penetrated everywhere like they are in the United States, though they certainly are gigantic. So they've upped that. And so with that in mind, I think it's safe to assume that they're interested in everything, but they've been interested in everything for a while. This year we saw them get the NFL, for sure. This year we saw them, like I said, get the French League, but they also passed on other elite rights in other places in the world. They're always mentioned with every rights negotiation. The Serie A is a great example, the Rugby Premiership in the UK. And I think the same thing's happened in the United States. So they passed on acquiring the National Hockey League, though they were mentioned as being interested. So what they choose to invest in, they're very careful about. Right. And it's unclear to me where college football fits into that mix. The NFL is a real big bet, and they're going to learn a lot from what happens with that. They've made a long-term investment with that. You could ask the question seriously, do they need any more internally? Because we don't know what their goals are. Their goals are a little different than ours, right? They're experimenting. They've got different objectives. That company is largely a web services company. So it's unclear to me what their direction would be. You can't assume they're going to, and also when they do bid, almost always it's as they're a piece of the puzzle. They're not in there driving the rights value up. In the NFL case, Thursday Night Football kind of never had a home, a proper home, and it found itself kind of without a home again, and into this came Amazon to be able to complete the puzzle, but they're going to own about 8% of the game content. Right, most of the game content is going to remain on broadcast television for the life of this deal, mostly. Though there's streaming opportunities inside it, that'll probably mostly be incremental. So you have to assume that they're prepared to participate, but you can't assume that they're going to be there and simply outbid any established media company, which themselves are undergoing these evolutions where, you know, just 3 years ago, John, we were told that established media companies couldn't compete with streaming-only platforms, non-traditional ones like Facebook and Amazon and Google. Well, Facebook and Google are not involved in these rights. Amazon is, in kind of the way I said, and that's it. So established media and their new digital platforms, ESPN+, Peacock, the new Warner Media Discovery platform, that's where the digital rights are going. And that creates a kind of different marketplace, I think, than what some folks thought would happen here in the 2020s, where they expected Google to come in and just say, look, we'll pay whatever to get this because we think it'd be great for YouTube. That narrative didn't materialize. Where the established networks are kind of in control of this content still, and it's probably going to all end up with them, though some of it on new digital platforms they've created themselves.
We're talking to Patrick Crakes, media consultant, former vice president of programming at Fox. Let me ask you, you know, George Kliavkov is hired as the new commissioner of the Pac-12, comes from the MGM entertainment world. How is that beneficial to the Pac-12 as they discuss media rights, streaming, you know, their television deal in general? How does his background dovetail?
Well, I think his background dovetails most in the sense that he's been a manager of diverse types of businesses and projects, so he has a good idea about how to surround himself with the people who can execute on the strategic vision he articulates. And that is really the key, right? It's, you know, personnel with policy is an old political conversation, maxim. And I think in this case, his diverse background enables him to say, look, I don't have to be an expert here to know what good strategy is. What I need are the right people in place to execute this strategy and help me formulate it and manage it. And I think that's the thing he's going to bring to the table. I would expect him to get the right partners on the media side. I think his other skills, those also the other things that you have to do as commissioner of the Pac-12, that also, you know, according to people who are experts in that area, need some attention as well. He can find the right people to be in charge of those lanes, and then he manages them while he sets strategy with them, right? And I think that's the skill he brings, and I think that's the wise choice. I don't know him. I do know people that do know him. They speak enormously highly of him. So I haven't found anyone, they really do. So I think that's the skill set, and I would expect him to make interesting hires, ones that people say, well, that person certainly knows what they're doing in that lane. And I think that's the skill he brings. It's a very important one in leadership, because true leadership, you know, you can't do everything. You've got to set policy, and then you've got to pick personnel to execute that strategy.
Patrick, before I cut you loose, you know, we're watching numbers on sports viewership rise. It's sort of coming back. We're comparing it to 2 years ago, and we're going, okay, the audience is back and then some. What do you think happened with viewership during the pandemic, and what do you, you know, what do you see sort of as people start to digest sports more?
Well, I think during the pandemic, you have a real practical, right? I mean, there was a real obvious thing. It disrupted everything. It certainly disrupted viewing, right? If the events aren't on, people get away from watching television. There was a big rush to streaming, then that kind of tapered off some. Basically, just media usage kind of went, you know, kind of went sideways or down. Its composition changed. Because, you know, there's no live sports, there's no reason to watch. Then when it comes back, right, it's kind of ad hoc, different awareness. People take for granted that everyone's aware, right? You know, John, you and I are sports insiders, but the general market, right, for the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, whatever, you know, they don't watch sports the way we do, right? It's important to them, but they think about it like a day or 2 days out. And they often go to the television set because they approximately know, or they go to the screen, whatever screen they're using, and they approximately know that the event's on. They try to find it. You know, we had a whole period where things returned, events returned, and the ecosystem is just jacked up, right? The way that folks enter it and exit it, TV usage was down for a long time, right? TV usage is basically the pool of people available to watch a show. It's not just on linear networks. It extends to digital, right? People sometimes don't understand that includes the digital viewing. If you're watching on YouTube TV, your viewing counts as much as it counts if you're watching on Comcast. And I think that whole ecosystem was disrupted, right? So that had an impact, and it's been slow to rebuild because most people are living their lives and they come back to this stuff slowly. So it makes sense it's coming back up now. I would also say that, you know, as a research executive, you know, I wear kind of three hats in the television business. On the research side, I spent, you know, 10 years on the board of directors of something called the Media Ratings Council, which audits Nielsen Media Research and all third-party media measurement services in the United States. It's a consortium of media networks and advertising agencies, and you hire Ernst and Young to do these audits. So, you know, Nielsen had some struggles during the pandemic, and the Nielsen viewing is the currency of which the entire media business is really built upon. And quite frankly, they're not going anywhere, right? And they had some problems with the field reps who come into the homes to make sure that everything's wired correctly, to make sure that they have the composition of the sample home correctly. And Nielsen has readily admitted that they basically, because they couldn't send field reps into the home, that impacted the quality of the sample, which I don't know how much of that accounts for this, but it accounts for some. And as we've come out of the pandemic, that's been corrected because the field reps are coming back into the home. So that's a whole nother interesting topic, but I think it's behavioral. I think it made sense. And then I think there's this Nielsen angle, because there's always a Nielsen angle, John, in media. It never ends. And it's not going to end because of digital either. They're probably going to end up taking that over too. And that's not going to go away. But we are coming back to levels from 2 years ago, which makes sense. And it's a great thing to see. We're not quite there yet. I'll opine on whether we're really back or not when I get the first full weeks of ratings for the NFL in September, and then I'm out.
Patrick Crakes, I appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for your service and your expertise.
Absolutely, John. It was a pleasure to be here, and thanks a lot for having me.
There it is. The Pac-12's up against it. We wanted an industry insider. We got one. We got the VP of content from Fox. Great stuff from Patrick Crakes. Leave it here. Well, I am stoked. A week from Thursday, the 7th annual Baldface Truth Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament will be happening. Live broadcast right here on the station you're listening to, statewide. Whole bunch of celebrity golfers will be out there. I want to thank our friends at First Call Heating and Cooling, High Caliber Millwrights, White Claw, Shoe Mill, Gresham Ford, Brickside Brewery, Adidas, Bricks, The Wall, Cherish. Got to thank Milwaukee Lumber, among others, Chown Hardware, a sponsor of the event as well. It'll be a lot of fun out at the Reserve Golf Course a week from Thursday. Among the celebrity golfers and a sky-high draft pick on the celebrity draft board, one Nicole Ragone, now working with Root Sports, also a Pac-12 analyst as well. Nicole, you were a lottery pick in this draft.
I honestly am shocked. I like golfing. I have just gotten into it because of the pandemic. It's one of the things that has a lot of space in between you and the other person. So I started to pick up golf a little bit over the pandemic. And then when I heard about the celebrity golf tournament, it was an absolute no-brainer for me to participate.
I think it's a fun event. You don't have to be a great golfer to participate, but the team that drafted you has either been first or second in each of the 7 years. Like, they are a contender. Is there additional pressure on you? You're a college athlete.
Absolutely. There's always some pressure. You want to show that you can hang, and I'm working on it. I really am. I have to show off my athletic ability in an area that I know I can. But I don't think we're going to be choosing I'm not going to have the best ball every single time. It'll be a fun event to participate in, but I think they already know what they're getting from me.
Yeah, and look, we play best ball, and so it's very easy going. You only need one great golfer on your team. But I always am looking for an opportunity to contribute. Nicole, you played college volleyball, Washington State. You played at a high level. Do you enter this kind of with a competitive or a fun spirit? Like, what motivates you when you get out there?
Well, of course, competitive is the first reaction from a former college athlete. But lastly, I mean, it's not my sport. It's not something that I've done forever. What actually motivates me is the fact that we're getting back to our community and investing in the next generation of artists, musicians, professors, teachers, and athletics. I mean, without having all those opportunities from the great state of Oregon, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So that is absolutely what motivates me the most, and I cannot wait to be a part of it.
Let's talk about where you're at today, because we have seen you on the Pac-12 Network as an analyst. I hear you're going to do some work for Root Sports. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to be participating with the Hillsboro Hops. They have 5 games this year on Root Sports. Rich Burke is the lead play-by-play. Rich Burke and I work together at the Pac-12 Network, and we always are looking for great stories to talk about the kids that are involved and the athletes that are involved in also Pac-12 teams, but also now the Hillsboro Hops. And the first game is against the Spokane Indians, so we're going to be looking for some awesome stories to showcase these phenomenal professional athletes. It's been a long time, 20 months, that we haven't had the Hillsboro Hops playing, and I really miss it. They've had a lot of success in the 7 seasons that they've had, and I can't wait to be a part of them.
Yeah, it's interesting because I went to a game just late May. It was one of their first games, and I talked to K.L. Wambacher, the general manager, and one of the things he told me was that the players that are playing for the Hops, the question was asked, how many of those players specialized in only baseball? How many of them played club baseball? It's an interesting fact for parents listening that think your kids need to specialize or you're falling behind. None of the Hillsboro Hops specialized and played only baseball. They were all multi-sport athletes.
Not surprising. I mean, I really think that specializing can also cause a lot of injuries. So when especially young in the body, my background in athletics started in ice skating and then went to soccer, then gymnastics, then dance, and then ended up in the volleyball world. And without all those different sports, I wouldn't be as talented as I was in volleyball. And so now knowing that all these kids are doing the same thing, and these young professional athletes it makes sense. Any time you start to specialize, I think you limit your opportunities in the athletic world.
I love that you're going to be out there for Root Sports. I love that you're going to be on the golf course a week from Thursday at the Reserve. For people who want more info, you can go to baldfacetruth.org. You can see the celebrities. You can see who they were drafted by. Nicole, have fun in this event, and thank you for helping raise money for area kids. I think it's important. Some kids will get to do some activities that they couldn't have done because you're out there golfing. So thank you for volunteering to do that.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled and excited.
I will see you there. And I'm hoping that I don't embarrass myself. I'm motivated by the fear of failure. So there I go.
Absolutely. I All couldn't agree more.
Nicole Ragone, Root Sports Pac-12 analyst. She'll be out on the course. It'll be a lot of fun, and you'll get to listen to it. And you can follow the scoring live right here on this station as they will update. We're going to have Judah Newby and Peter Sampson playing the role of Jim Nantz, kind of a blend of that. And maybe you'll be sitting by a fireplace telling people about the tradition of this golf tournament, but talking all about how it's going to raise some money. And I want to thank the sponsors, of course. Thank the people at the Reserve Golf Course who do a terrific job putting on the event. But every year it's a home run event. Miss Oregon, Allison Cook, will be on the course. Nick Aliotti, the former Oregon defensive coordinator. Neil Lomax, all-pro NFL quarterback, will be out there. Alex Molden, former NFL first-round draft pick, will be out there. Just a whole bunch of fun and a great event. And thank you to Nicole Ragone and all the other celebrity golfers who are going to participate, because we auctioned them off, and that's how the foundation made the money. Nicole Ragone raised about $3,000 herself because the team that picked her said, we want a former college athlete because we figure she will be competitive and fun. So there you go.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.